What are the 10 core ideas of Oswald Spengler? This is a notoriously difficult thinker. His book, The Decline of the West, is rather long. I have published on him at length in the past in my own book, The Prophets of Doom. There's Spengler in the center. So this video is intended as a gentle introduction, a guide to the basic framework and ideas of Spengler. So let's not waste any further time. I would say underpinning all of his thinking is his notion that cultures are living organisms. Every high culture possesses a unique soul, an animating principle that determines its art, its mathematics, its religion, its politics. Much like a living organism, I've always thought of it as being like an oak tree where it goes through various stages of its life. It starts young in the spring as a sapling. It grows. Eventually, it will reach its height and its peak. And finally, it will die, decay, fall over, and various things will start to grow out of it again. You know, that will be a new civilization coming after that. It passes through fixed stages: birth, growth, maturity, and inevitable death. And the point Spengler really wishes to stress against the delusions of people who think otherwise is that no culture can escape this biological destiny. Spengler insists that this is not simply a poetic metaphor. It is what he calls a morphological law. No culture can escape its own life cycle. Another really important thing to grasp for Spengler is that history isn't plural. It is not linear. The Enlightenment myth of a single progressive humanity is, for Spengler, a provincial delusion. History is not a corridor leading upward towards reason and liberty. It is an arena of multiple independent cultures, each self-contained, each following its own arc. There is no universal mankind. There are only peoples, and each of those peoples have their own destiny. And Spengler's got all of these different ideas of the different culture souls of all of these different civilizations. For example, the Chinese people, their central symbol is the winding path. For the Egyptians, it was the kind of long corridor, and there are various other ones. For the Indians, it's zero, it's the nil concept, and this is a very interesting aspect of Spengler, especially if you are coming from that Western progressive Enlightenment mindset that sees history as a kind of history of humanity as a whole. He completely rejects that idea. And his various reasons for doing so are interesting. This also means that Spengler is a relativistic thinker, wherein there is no one universal truth for all peoples. The truth, capital T, has to be approached through the particularities of each culture. So that's kind of interesting. Another really important thing to grasp is culture, he spells it with a K, culture, becomes civilization. So the culture is the organic, the symbolic, the spiritual. This is, you know, in Western history, what he calls Faustian history. It's the age of cathedrals, it's great philosophy, it's living myths. An age of magic, if you want. When culture becomes civilization, it starts to lose all of these organic aspects. It starts to lose the sacredness of the symbolic. It starts to lose its spiritual core, and it becomes mechanical, abstract, cosmopolitan. This is the age of megacities, of engineering, of the rootless intellectual. And for Spengler, this translation, this transition from culture to civilization is irreversible. Once a people have gone through this, there's no going back. It's a little bit like when Adam and Eve saw each other naked and they can't, you know, they have to wear clothes from then on. You can't go back to the previous blissful state in Spengler. So this is also quite important to understand if you truly want to understand Spengler. He also argues that the West is in its winter. Faustian culture, defined by its restless striving. He says that Faustian man, Western man, his central symbol is infinity. Okay, it's the infinite. You know, boundless space. There is no limit on the horizon. We can do anything. You can achieve anything. It's Icarus flying towards the sun. Mathematics of the infinite, Gothic verticality. Okay, the West has always been striving to go up onwards and upwards to infinity and beyond. He argues that it entered its terminal stage between approximately 1800 and the year 2000. What we celebrate as progress, Spengler understands as the cold brilliance of a dying season. The creative pulse in the culture has long ceased. There are only the civilizational mechanical remains. Now, if you're enjoying this, folks, I've got lots of courses at the academic agency. The Trivium is the bestseller. If you're particularly interested in Spengler, there is the book, Prophets of Doom, of course. But let's carry on. So another thing that he argues is that in the late stages of a civilization, democracy and money come to rule. An organic culture, which, you know, was built on a spiritual core, gives way to civilization. Power migrates from what he calls the first two estates. So the first estate is the aristocracy. The second estate is the church. It migrates away from them, from aristocracy, land, and from tradition, towards two impersonal and abstract forces. The first one is mass democracy. And I'll just kind of get myself out of the way here. The press manufactures opinion. Elections ratify that opinion. The will of the people is the will of those who own the printing press. And this is a very interesting aspect of Spengler's thinking, because he does not necessarily see the education of the masses and teaching them how to read as a liberation necessarily. He sees it as, oh, you've made yourselves easier to propagandize by the people who own the printing presses, and they will basically brainwash you. Okay, that's the way he thinks of mass education. He sees it straightforwardly as mass brainwashing, and he sees democracy simply as the rubber stamping of that brainwashing. Secondly, he sees finance capital, which is money being the supreme political force, as anonymous, placeless, and indifferent to blood and soil. We'll get onto in a second. So Spengler really doesn't like this because it's abstract and universal. And for him, a living, breathing, vital culture is particular to a people, particular to a place. And these things, democracy and finance capital, are rootless. They're universal. They know no place. They respect no place. And this is one of the reasons that Spengler has come back into fashion in recent years, as globalism as a concept has come under critique from various different political forces. That's why people are now interested in Spengler. That's why people like me are writing books with Spengler featured. Another part of Spengler's basic framework is that Caesarism is inevitable. When money and democracy have exhausted themselves, a man of will replaces both. The final political form of a dying culture is not tyranny in the classical sense. It is the rise of a Caesar, a personal ruler who cuts through the paralysis of party politics and finance. The forms of democracy are preserved, but the substance has already perished. Spengler regards this transition not as a catastrophe, but as a historical necessity to transition the winter phase to the end game. Once you get to the end game, then we can get on to the next spring. But you should know that the next spring, in Spengler's view, is never the same civilization reborn. Okay, it is a different, it's a new thing. So in Spengler's conception, and this is important to understand because I don't think a lot of people grasp it, when Spengler talks about the West, he is talking about the Faustian West. He is talking about what other people might call Christendom, the civilization, the culture that was born out of the Crusader kings, the Christian kings after Charlemagne. Okay, he's talking about Christendom, and it experienced its spring cycle around the time of the Crusades. It experienced its summer in the Renaissance. It experienced its autumn in the expansion of the imperialist powers and in the British Empire. And the British Empire, in many ways, signaled the start of the winter cycle, which is materialistic, it's utilitarian, it's universalistic. You know, and now obviously it's the American Empire, but in Spengler's conception, before this form, this dying, already dead civilization can transition, Caesarism must take place. Then when it dies, the new thing that arises is not the same thing as before. So you could argue that the Christendom arose out of the ashes of the old ancient world, of the Romans, of the Greeks and the Romans. But in Spengler's conception, the Greeks and the Romans are not part of the West, as people call it. They are the civilization that went before. And this thing that has been, you know, the thing that started with Charlemagne and then has ended with the American Empire, that is its own civilization. And when it dies and a new one comes, that will be a new civilization again. It's important to grasp this because many people do not agree with that. They see continuity between the Romans and now. They see continuity between the Greek and Roman culture and the Christian culture. Spengler does not. His basic theory of history is disjunctive, and it's important to understand this if you want to understand Spengler. Technology and imperialism mark the end. Technical mastery, which comes in late civilization, achieves extraordinary technical power, but it deploys it without spiritual purpose. The machine dominates its creator. Okay, this is the obviously an idea in the Matrix and films like that and sci-fi, but also we can see it in the real world. Are the machines serving us, or do people have to transform their lives to conform with what the machine asks of them? This is something of profound significance to Spengler. Global expansion sees imperial overreach, which disperses the cultural energies outward. It is vast in scope, but it's hollow at the center. And Spengler, as I mentioned, was not a fan of the British Empire. He saw that empire as essentially doing this process. And then finally, we get exhaustion. Expansion cannot continue indefinitely. It will reach its limits, and then it will start to contract again. The late empire overextends. The will dissipates and the structure collapses from within. And that indeed did happen to the British Empire eventually. It did contract. It did reach its limits. It wasn't able to sustain itself. It wasn't able to withstand two world wars. And then you got a new power, the American Empire, that came. But in Spengler's conception, the American Empire is just a continuation of the West. We still haven't had this final moment because, you know, the American Empire was able to continue trying to expand these universal ideas outwards. You could argue that that is reaching its end phase now with the rise of China and with, you know, you could argue current entanglements in the Middle East and in Russia showing the limits of American power. We're reaching this point in Spenglerian terms. Now, the key idea for Spengler is race, blood, and soil. For Spengler, deep cultural difference is not reducible to environment, education, or rational choice. It is rooted in blood. Now, when he's talking about blood, he doesn't mean necessarily, you know, like he's what he's talking about is the accumulated biological and historical inheritance of a people. Okay, the accumulated biological and historical inheritance of a people. And for Spengler, who was German, that goes right the way back to before Charlemagne, to the Germanic tribes who were barbarians at the end of the Roman Empire, who were responsible for bringing down, or partly responsible for, the downfall of the Roman Empire. Spengler would argue that the Roman Empire did not fall because of the barbarians, that actually they're just a symptom of the very late stage, that really every empire falls under its own implosion. It's also important to note that when the Roman Empire fell, that signaled the end of that Greco-Roman civilization that had been a thing in the ancient world. And we entered into the birth of a new Western civilization, starting with these Germanic tribes who went on to be the Christian kings. Then, related to that, so that's the notion of the blood. It's a kind of organic, deep, generational history reaching all the way back to your forefathers. And then there's the soil, which is the landscape that shapes the perception across generations. So the actual landmass, the place that people find themselves, does end up being quite important for Spengler. And this, I would say, is one of his more controversial ideas. Obviously, you can see where the left would find these ideas controversial, but also on the right, many people who want, let's just say, a stronger racialism, criticize Spengler sometimes for kind of making race culture. But that's for people to argue about elsewhere. Finally, we're getting towards the end now, progress is an illusion of decline. The belief in endless improvement in science, in liberty, in human perfectibility is not an achievement of the winter phase. It is the characteristic delusion of the winter phase. A man like Tony Blair to Oswald Spengler would just, you know, he'd just say you are deluded. All of the things you tell yourself are progress are not. What the age believes is that history moves towards greater reason, freedom, and material well-being, and the arc bends upwards. This is the fundamental belief of liberalism. What Spengler argued was that the very intensity of the faith in progress that a man like Tony Blair would have signals exhaustion, a culture substituting optimism for vitality. So when Spengler says optimism is cowardice, he's getting at something like this, that he's like, well, look, all of your optimism, all of your, it's covering, this is not real vitality. It's a kind of cope. It's a kind of cope. And if you listen to the way that modern evangelists talk about something like AI as a cure-all, you know, Mr. Blair included, you can see how this optimism is a substitute for something approaching genuine vitality, which is what Spengler ideally would like people to get back to. So how does it all end at the end? Well, there is a coming age of primal forces. After the long twilight of late civilization, its peace, its comfort, its bloodless rationalism, Spengler anticipates a return of destiny, of great wars, of the reemergent of instinct over intellect, and the eventual stirring of new, as yet unknown cultures from the periphery. The age of Caesars gives way ultimately to the age of the new barbarians, and thus the cycle begins again. So that's a very gentle introduction to Spengler. Now, I will mention again, this is a complex thinker. There's a lot of stuff that I had to glide over. I'm giving you essentially the York notes here. It's a gentle introduction, just the basics. There's so much more to say on each one of these points. I could go on for a very long time talking about Spengler, as some people have done here on YouTube. I recommend that you read him. I recommend that you read this book as a even more in-depth guide than the one I've given you here. Pick up a course at the academic agency. Most importantly of all, get out. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.